Welcome to an encore episode of Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm S.W. Conser, here at the Portland Book Festival, which is a hybrid event all this week, part in-person, part virtual. Comics artist and animator Aminder Dhaliwal is back at the festival this year with a new book, Cyclopedia Exotica. Aminder has been a storyboard director at Cartoon Network and for the Nickelodeon show Sanjay and Craig. She is now the animation director for Disney TV Animation. I talked with Aminder at the 2018 festival when her serialized webcomic Woman World had just been collected in book form. And since this interview first aired, Disney's Freeform cable network announced that Aminder would be writing the pilot episode for an animated version of Woman World, to be produced by Felicia Day. While you're enjoying this vintage interview, we'd like to encourage you to take a moment, go online, and support community radio at kboo.fm. And now, Aminder Dhaliwal, recorded at the Portland Book Festival, November 10th, 2018. Your comic, Woman World, has been getting plenty of buzz. It's been called an unusual and charming farce by Publishers Weekly. And comedian Tig Notaro says, it turns out a world without men is very funny. Give us a little introduction into Woman World.
Yeah, sure. It's an idea I came up with, which I feel like to me is an old trope, but kind of needed some revitalizing. It's a world in which men have gone extinct, and the women live on and have their own struggles.
I'm reminded just a little bit of the P.D. James novel Children of Men, only Woman World is considerably less dystopian.
Yeah, I had a plan that I wanted to make something really lighthearted, really approachable. So much of sci-fi is extremely dark and dystopian, and I kind of accidentally, in searching for a humorous tone, stumbled into a utopian world. So that's always been something I wanted to, that I had a more fun time with, more fun creating, and more fun just being in. So in that, it is sure sci-fi that it's the idea is somewhat dystopian. It's these women who live on, and there is a struggle with how they will procreate. But the everyday comic look and the daily strip feel of it makes it very tonally light, very approachable.
So Woman World has been a webcomic. That's how it started out. But it reminds me, have you been a fan of classic newspaper comics like Peanuts and Doonesbury and Bloom County? Woman World kind of reminds me of those character-driven strips where a series of daily gags will add up to an ongoing narrative.
Yeah, that it was one of my big inspirations was to create something which kind of brought together this old style of cartoon of daily strip and also use the internet, where now we're seeing a lot more arcing stories and you can, you know, follow one storyline all the way through. I wanted to bring those together and find that middle ground where you can pick up Woman World wherever you want, you know the basic premise, and you can read a strip. That's all you need to do, and maybe it's not for you, maybe you put it away, or maybe you want to keep going. This light arcing story somewhat came in from using reoccurring characters and kind of stories in my own life or things that I thought were interesting, which were then reflected in the storylines. So it was never intentional, but there are some threads that go through the entire story.
Yeah, the story is set in the future, far enough in the future that your grandma character is the go-to person for historical exposition, historical being the early 21st century.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she is kind of our guide. She is us. She lived during our time. She refers to the TV show Parks and Rec. She understands the Paul Blart reference. The character of Ulana, the grandmother, would have been quite young during this time, and the comic then takes place 70 to 80 years later when now there's more female births have taken place and the men have disappeared and any older men have died away due to a genetic disease which has caused them to not live as long.
One of the gags I really like is there's a broken down Blockbuster video store. So the younger people are wondering, well, what did it look like back in the day? And then you flash back to 2018 where it's still a broken down Blockbuster store.
Yeah, I am. That one was a really fun one to do because there are some really interesting pop culture references which don't require the gender aspect, which is more just about how different they assume the world was or how actually similar the world was, is to their time. So that one was a really fun one to do because it kind of reflects just like men have disappeared, this idea of VHS kind of disappearing or this time in which we used to go to a store to find something to watch or be recommended what to watch or have to wait even, like, what is it, 10 months or 12 months we used to have to wait before a movie was in theaters to, like, actually renting it. And now it's, like, the next day it's available. Sometimes it's still in theaters and I feel like it's available, like, to stream online. So it's interesting to me that we live in this time and we've seen the difference. People my age saw that difference. And it's so hard to reconcile with how hard it must have been, like, for anyone, like, to go back to that time, which just sounds impossible now. So I kind of thought that was interesting. And there's a few other examples in the book of, yeah, just little glimpses of our life now and how foreign that seems to them in the future.
History is moving fast right now.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like we're on fast forward where I can't keep up with how fast things are changing. You know, whether it be with I get fans sending me these breakthroughs in science with there was recently two female mice that were able to create an offspring. And I had a whole bunch of a fan send me that as an example of like, hey, look, it's happening. And you know, that like I started the comic over a year ago, that wasn't even a thing then. So it's like interesting to see the world change around me when it is reflected in the book, or there are examples of that in the book as well.
One of the really prominent themes is this way that the characters are creating this new culture. There's a flag, there's a Beyoncé's thighs flag, and then there's discussion about what to call the society: Ladyland, Female Federation, Matriarch Macrocosm.
There's Gal Globe in there, there's a lot of alliteration. There's something I really liked about the title Woman World. I felt like it was so memorable and also just like fun to say, I guess. And in doing that, I realized that I had established the comic as Woman World, but I wondered if the women in that world would think of it like that. Just like we don't have, you know, a specific, we haven't named the Earth. We were like kind of provided that name and all use it. But what would we call it if we could, you know, something? So I had some fun with coming up with different names, none of which were actually ever titles I had actually thought of for the comic. But Woman World is always... I always thought I really liked the way that sounded. And it's it defines the entire idea also in just the title, which I like the instant effect of that. And then on top of that, the flag idea, that was, I always knew I wanted in some form Beyoncé on the flag. Just deciding which body part was surprisingly hard because I didn't want to, like, you know, overly like sexualize her or anything like that. Yeah, I was like choosing between her thighs and her calves for quite a while, and ultimately decided on her thighs for my main village. But then there is a comic in there where you discover that all the other villages in the area also have Beyoncé flags, and they have different parts of her bodies of her body as well. And so it all kind of comes together.
I think the only banner that could possibly compete might be Michelle Obama's arms.
Oh, you know what? That was, I for a while was wondering how I could work her arms into it. I had a really early comic that was a mantra that all the women used when meditating. It was just something like that they go to for their happy place was to say, Michelle Obama's arms, Michelle Obama's arms. And it was like their equivalent of like, om.
Well, your characters all have such lilting names. Lara, Layla, Uma, Ina, Gaia. They're so nice to say out loud.
Yeah, so there's a little more to their names. I'm not sure how many people have maybe taken the time to Google them, but if they do, they would see that they actually all come from the Seven Daughters of Eve, I believe is like the quick term for it, but it's the original women from whom the entire Earth's population has descended from.
And one of the running threads is that the character of Gaia just never wears clothes, and it's only occasionally commented on.
Yeah, the politicians in Woman World are nudists. So at one point, there is a comic about other mayors meeting up for some sort of political conference, never really discussed, but they're all also nudists. And I just thought it'd be interesting because there's something really special about a politician presenting while nude. There's absolutely no shame, and it's the most like kind of embarrassing way you could present your argument or, you know, present your own politics. So I kind of wanted that throughout the world. It kind of started with just the fact that I like drawing her nude. That's like literally the only reason the first comic has her nude. But I also like it as a quick question everyone has, like when they're reading it, because yeah, the other women in that world don't comment on it that often, but it's something as a reader that you want to know more about, or like you're obviously picking up on that you're like, wait, shouldn't we be asking questions? And like, why is she naked? So there's a couple comics in there that like reflect that back. But yeah, I like the idea that politicians are nudists.
I'm S.W. Conser, and you're listening to an encore episode of Words in Pictures, featuring animation director and comics artist Aminder Dhaliwal, author of the books Woman World and Cyclopedia Exotica. I spoke with Aminder while she was in town for the Portland Book Festival in November of 2018. You live and work in L.A. now, but you grew up in Ontario, near Toronto. And I just see a lot more elements in your absurdist humor of Canadian comics and TV shows, maybe European influences as well. What sort of absurdist stuff did you grow up with that was really a solid influence on you?
That's an interesting question. So I do feel that I have a slower kind of sense of humor, maybe a sweeter kind of sense of humor than maybe some of my contemporaries, I guess.
You're not quite as cynical or as scathing as some of your contemporaries, you're saying?
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. I'm not as cynical, and I don't find humor in putting someone down or making fun of someone. It actually makes me somewhat uncomfortable. My favorite things, the humor comes from misunderstandings or more of a like self-anxiety, something that there is then like relatable to someone else, something which has kind of a sweeter honesty to it. That's just what I'm attracted to. So when creating Woman World, it was the first time I was making something which was just truly me. And through doing so many comics, I realized that that is not only my sense of humor, but what I'm also attracted to in other comics and other TV shows, movies. There's something really pretty, I find, about something really fun and approachable about just being lighthearted and sweet. So, what other comics?
Or books or films or culture.
So, one of my favorite comics was Persepolis, which has just the most interesting comedy, I think, in it. For a world in which Marjane Satrapi has clearly shown everything is changing, everything in her life is really rough, and she has all these really dark moments, she really has an amazing ability to pick up on these really realistic kid moments in between there, and these kind of selfish ways of looking at these large world problems, because that's the only way a main character would truly understand that world, and it is her biography. So there's something really special I thought about that, and I was introduced to that comic backwards because I actually saw the animation first, coming from an animation background. So I saw the animated film, and I thought, there's no way that she could have, you know, expressed all of these ideas in a graphic novel, because it's almost felt like it was easier to do in animation, because you can have voiceover, you can have narration, you can have acting in the way things are said. And then I read the graphic novel, and I was just so impressed at how that tone stayed so true when expressed in animation. Jillian Tamaki is someone else who I just adore her sense of humor, and Supermoon Magic Academy was a massive influence, and that's fairly new. Kate Beaton is someone whose comedy I love, and she can just do expressions that no one else can, and she can make just a single drawing with no context funny, and I think that's amazing.
Well, for our listeners who don't know what storyboards are all about, yeah, what can you tell us about storyboarding for cartoons, for TV animation?
So storyboarding, I come from specifically storyboard-driven shows, and in that, you are given an outline from a writer, which the creator has approved, and then you, in kind of comic form, create the entire script and all the drawings. In that, there are many, many takes where you are refining the story, the script, and the visual look of the entire episode. But the purpose of the storyboard stage is to allow the animators, layout artists, anyone who comes after you to actually produce the animation. So you're deciding what shots are necessary, the shot flow, how do you go from one shot to another, deciding all the camera angles, and tonally, you're also figuring out lighting and acting. So it's quite a intense job, but it's really, really fun as well. My job, luckily, has allowed me to work in comedy, and TV has been really fun because you get to explore so many different styles of art as well in animation. But I know for script-driven shows, that's you're given a script and then you storyboard from that, and you might also be getting the audio. And for feature animation, I can only imagine it's very, very different. And I personally don't think I'd find it as fun, because I kind of like starting fresh with a new episode of something every 6 weeks, which is what I usually have to storyboard. And currently I'm storyboard directing, so I overlook three storyboard artists, and I get to edit what they're boarding and change things and direct them to the vision of the episode that I had.
Art Spiegelman, the creator of the graphic novel Mouse, once bristled at all of the suggestions that Mouse become an animated film. He said, "Comics are not storyboards for films." But on the other hand, it seems like your animation background has really informed the pacing of your webcomic, Woman World. There's a lot of great cinematic pacing in there, like the slow takes of the characters and the pauses, just the general flow of the strip.
Yeah, I felt like there was almost a frame rate I could give the audience, that the speed at which they would, when reading it online, that they would be flipping through the panels. So it kind of felt like I could build in pauses and have it play like I had wanted it to. Of course, then putting it into a book, into a print format, felt very, very different. And suddenly I had to think of how to add more pacing by adding more kind of dead space, or having to switch a punchline to the next page because it felt like it needed that extra amount of time. But yeah, I really feel like that's my background in animation. That's just how I think, and that's how I actually read other people's comics as well, that there's a like standard flow at which I like read and look at the visuals, and I can feel when it's like, there should maybe have been slightly different pacing here, and I'd just like change it like that. However, my animation background also limits me in other ways, where I have a very hard time thinking in terms of like breaking what a panel looks like. To me, like a panel has to be, well, especially now coming from Instagram, it's like always square, and it's like, or it's always rectangular, and I like have a hard time not thinking like that. So I'm so impressed when people change that and really play with the flow that way as well.
I suppose there have been fans who have suggested that Woman World be adapted into a series of short animated pieces.
Oh, that'd be really fun. You know, sometimes when I am just at home, I'm thinking like, oh, I should really just spend the time just animate one of my own comics. And I like never get around to ever doing it because animation takes so long. And the entire concept of the comics came from making something kind of fast and loose and putting it out there for somewhat like instant gratification, because in animation, as you'd know, like we work on things which aren't out then for 2 years, so that it's so delayed, and kind of putting those two worlds together for me just feels so wrong now sometimes. I'm like, oh, but do I want to spend a lot of time on this one animated short and then I'm not getting the thing I was trying to do in the first place? I think eventually I'll end up animating at least one of the comics.
So one of the shows that you've worked on for Nickelodeon is Sanjay and Craig. It's really kind of a breakthrough in representation. And you grew up in the Toronto area, and you live in LA now, both of which have very solid South Asian communities. So what was it like for you to be a part of the Sanjay and Craig team?
That was really fun. I remember seeing the pilot and knowing that I wanted to work on the show because, again, it was board-driven, so I got to decide the jokes and the entire script. But it was a very collaborative crew as well. The creators were always open to throwing things just out the window and starting fresh with a brand new idea. At that time, also, Nickelodeon was taking like a lot of chances on a lot of new shows with just different looks to them, so it was exciting to be part of this company as they were like redefining what their brand was, which I think they have a better idea of now. But it was just, they were for so long stuck on the version of themselves that was from the 90s, that was so much older. And so it was really fun to get to kind of redesign that with the company. Sanjay and Craig, but I'm really glad I got to work on that. It was a great crew and a great cast.
Disney TV Animation is your employer now, I guess. And they have been doing kind of a different look. It's kind of a web animation look. It's very different from the traditional Mickey Mouse characters that we think of from Grandpa's Day.
Yeah, I really respect when studios also have a spectrum of shows where like there isn't one defining look, and right now Disney has quite a few different looking shows. They have a lot of beautiful shows ultimately, but I think it's also a hard time where you realize how often on a TV show we're all trying to mimic a time where we were working on paper, and there comes a point at which you like, it's like, well, why don't we just go work on paper then if we're trying so hard to mimic that? And so the digital look and a much cleaner, finer look is something which I think we're starting to explore more of. And it starts to look sometimes a little cookie cutter. All the shows start doing it the same way. But I think there's still like boundaries to kind of break in that. And eventually we'll be doing it another way and we'll be making holograms or something. And then we'll be trying to make the holograms look like the digital versions, and it'll continue.
You have a really solid sense of kid culture, like how kids relate to each other and to the world. You know, do you have friends' kids or nieces and nephews that inspire you, that you look to for material?
I love kids. There's just such a pure excitement they get from watching things or reading things. There's no jadedness there yet, and I really, really love that. I do try and we do have volunteer opportunities where we get to work with kids in schools and we get to go draw with elementary aged school kids. And that's really fun, especially getting to talk to them, because it's surprising how often you forget like kids are such deep thinkers and you don't need to put on a face and talk to them in a certain way. You can really just talk to them like they're adults, and they will answer you as kids back. They will simplify very complex ideas, and they have this amazing ability to realize what's like authentic and what's kind of been faked. I feel like they have this radar to be able to see when a show or whatever it is, there's too much thinking that's gone into the kids will like this versus what you just like yourself, and you're putting that out there and they like it too for that reason. You can't try and think ahead to what they will like, or you can't try and dumb something down or change wording because you don't think they will understand something. They really understand context, and you don't need to change the way characters speak or something for that. But yeah, I have a nephew and a niece. They're still really, really young, but I do like seeing them as they grow older, how they're changing and the things they pick up on and like the kind of words that they use or just like what they have fun watching. And you really realize that there's such a, they love the safety of cartoons, and there's a certain flow that most cartoons have. There's like a nice 11 minutes of just fun, sit down, and everything will be okay. Everything will be reset in a TV show, and then we're out of it. There's like a certain safety to that repetition.
And the crazy ideas that come out of their heads, the dream logic and the fantasy, it's perfect material for animation.
Yeah, totally. It's surprising just like how I have so much artwork from my cousins and stuff who are now much older. They're in their teens, but from when they were 6, 7, 8, that I have just like art that I've saved from them because they had such weird ideas, and like they would always see me drawing and they were like, here, I made a drawing for you. And like I had to save so many of them because they're just so funny, and like these big ideas and these weird ideas that they just felt like, I made it, I have to give it to someone. I'm gonna give it to her because she's drawing all the time and she needs to see this. So much confidence in their own weird ideas.
Ever get tempted to swipe them for a show?
Oh man, there'd be some crazy shows, I guess.
Well, do you have any personal projects in the works, something new? Are you continuing Woman World now that it's been collected in a book?
So I've been taking a break for now. I did do a short like zine kind of version of two of the characters in Woman World. It was like maybe 12 comics. It was called Way Home. But ultimately, I just knew I wanted to take a break because I wasn't enjoying doing it as much anymore when it felt like I had to do it versus wanting to do it. So I thought a nice like long break would be good, and when I feel like going back to it, I will. But I still post on my Instagram quite often when I think of a dumb comic, sometimes completely unrelated to Woman World, sometimes related.
Well, the book is Woman World. It's a collection of web comics from the prolific pen of Aminder Dhaliwal. Aminder, thanks for joining us today at the Portland Book Festival.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
And for those listeners who'd like to find out more about your books as well as your animation work, where can they look?
So I mostly post on Instagram, and you can find me at Aminder_D. Otherwise, I'm also on Twitter under the same name, and the rest of my tour schedule is on Drawn and Quarterly.
You've been listening to an encore episode of Words and Pictures, recorded at the Portland Book Festival on November 10th, 2018. My guest has been Aminder Dhaliwal, animation director for Disney TV Animation and author of the comics collections Woman World and Cyclopedia Exotica. I'm S.W. Conser. Many thanks to the Oregon Historical Society for their logistical help with this interview, and thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and at KBOO.fm. You can find an archived version of this show later today at KBOO.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on Twitter @wordsandpicture.